Thank you, Dr. Misaki. And also thanks, Dr. Chen, on your way out for the leadership in organizing this session. I appreciate that. It's showed some good vision. We're building towards this point, I think, for many years. So it's nice to finally have a session that explicitly addresses these issues. So I'm Matthew Whiting. I'm a whole tree applied physiologist with Washington State University, and I'm based at the Research Center in Prosser. And I'm going to go through, in some ways, more of a philosophical approach to the punchline here, the title and how biology combined with technology will provide the industry with sustainable orchard systems as we look into the future. And what you're looking at there is a photo from cherry harvest this year up by Brewster, Washington, a collection of ladders and a collection of people about to embark on a very important process for those of you who do enjoy sweet cherries. By the way, you can't tell this from the photo, but one of the ways that cherry production is sustainable today is through immigrant worker programs. These are all H-2A workers that happen to be from Jamaica, which is difficult to tell from the photo here, but that's the reason that we're able to pick all the cherries that we do pick this year. So sweet cherry, I've always said, is really the epitome of a specialty crop. We were able to leverage this to an SCRI project 4 or 5 years ago to address some of the issues that I'll articulate today. And that's because extraordinarily high value has been more or less year to year, extraordinarily high perishability, and a particularly high cost of production, especially when you compare that with palm fruit species, for example. And I'm not going to show you a lot of data, but I will show you some data to substantiate those claims. And it's ephemeral, right? It's truly a summer fruit. It's here and then it's gone. And so there is great potential for profit and in the farming communities, and yet it's difficult, challenging, and expensive to do so. To prove the point, there were in Washington State this past season, there were 22 billion, and actually it was 21,999,997,035 cherries picked. But I rounded up to 22 billion that were picked this past year. And that translates at 10 grams per cherry, which is a nice piece of fruit, by the way. For those of you who are less familiar with cherries, that's about 220 million kilos. And I will show you some data in a moment that will substantiate that next number, which is that would take 7,333,000 hours for one of us in here to pick. That's about 916,000 days, 2,500 years. That's several lifetimes for one person. So it's a bit of a hyperbolic illustration here, I understand, but I'm going to show you how, with today's technology, you can reduce this from 2,500 years to perhaps almost 600 years for any one individual. This is the excitement. But let me begin by showing you this video that I took about 6-7 years ago now. This really underscores everything that I'm going to describe to you and how in stone fruit are particularly interested in increasing harvest efficiency. This is not joke. This is a commercial orchard near Zilla, Central Valley, Washington State. This is a woman who's been picking cherries probably for a few years. Here's a fellow who's already filled his bucket. But we're facing, as Dr. Misaki outlined, a decline in the availability of labor. We're seeing an increase in the costs of labor that naturally follows the decline in the availability. We're also seeing the demographics of pickers changing. I mentioned labor immigrant programs and the daughters of these people who are pickers and sons aren't all that interested in getting into picking. And so we've got to address this. That's not an efficient process that I just showed you. As Dr. Misaki outlined, we're afraid of ladders. If we continue that video, you could see this woman fall off this ladder. I've seen that several times over my career. And it's a serious and major issue. And so how do you address that? How do you address it from a horticultural point of view? Well, the one that my program has really been emphasizing is to improve the efficiency through orchard structures. It's a nice picture. This is a steep leader architecture, probably a 15, 16-year-old orchard. It's most likely Bing. And it looks nice at flowering, at harvest. It's an inefficient structure. There's 12 to 14-foot ladders that are utilized in the harvest of this. So why not do something like that? Let's transition into the same sort of structures that Dr. Misaki was outlining. Let's go with these planar structures. I want to sort of illustrate how we've come to that point. This is a fifth leaf cherry orchard that has intuitively much greater harvest efficiency than the one that you just saw. So as we think about then the keys to the future orchards, there are various fundamental blocks, including the genotypes of rootstock and cultivar, I also remind people there's also the genetics of your workers. That's the third type, right? There's sign and rootstock, and there's people in there. Well, what about the genetics of the people? We don't study that very often, Dr. Peace, but we might be interested in getting into that perhaps. And there's orchard systems and sites. So they must be profitable. Nobody is interested in putting in a block that's not profitable. It must be sustainable, I would argue. One of the keys that we see is future architectures and structures are systems that are simple. Simple to train people to work in, simple for pruning, simple for harvesting. They need to be precocious, consistently productive year after year. And the one that really drives a lot of the thought processes in our research program is an orchard structure that does facilitate incorporation of existing automation and mechanization, which are few. Show some examples, but also the future ones. And is there a structure that we can agree on that would at least provide us with that? And so it's a rhetorical question, but is that the orchard system of the future? This is a 50 plus, I'm saying 40, but I don't really know. We tend to call these the dinosaur blocks. This is classic being on Mazard rootstock. This is the foundations of the U.S. cherry industry. And yet it's a rather frightening photo. I liked it actually, but ironic that it was in the morning and there was this sort of haze in there. It looks kind of scary. Who's going to emerge? But we've been talking about and seeing headlines in the Good Fruit Grower, the Western Fruit Grower News, robot ready orchards, right? This has become sort of the buzz phrase. Is that orchard robot ready? Well, we tested that. And the robot was immediately confused. Didn't know where to prune, where to go to harvest. So I think a bit facetious, but the point is, no, it's not. So we're not planting orchards to that structure with those varieties, with those rootstock. We're looking for new genetics to give us a size control. But if we do think about what training system to develop and use, it is astounding how many options there are. You wouldn't think, well, it's not that difficult, right? We all have this vision. But there are many varied and I would suggest very complicated architectures that are being adopted. This is just one. This is more of a SOLAC structure. This photo was taken in Spain. I took a few months ago. The orchard advisor was from Chile. It's a very common structure for cherries in Chile. And it is a very complicated structure. Ostensibly simple to start. But then it becomes complicated with a lot of, you can't necessarily see all the wires and strings in there that are tying those branches down. Stefano talked about growth habit. Cherry tend to be very apically dominant, quite an upright growth habit. And so they fight that by tying each one of those horizontal limbs down to the leader. There's probably 20, 25 pieces of string in each one of those trees. How about the establishment of that orchard? How easy is it to do that? What are the costs associated with doing that? And the second key component, if I were just to generalize, what are the things one should be thinking about in choosing that orchard system? It is establishment, and the second one is maintenance. So once you've established that block and it's filled the space, now it's the third year, fourth year, how easy is it to maintain that? How do you manage the tops of the trees? How do you renew that fruiting wood? And how do you encourage and promote sustainable productivity in that structure? Or here's another cherry orchard, could be from the Dalles, Oregon. This one happens to be also in Spain, a Spanish bush architecture. There would be probably 8 to 10 different training systems that growers are planting in the ground now. And so there are a lot of choices, and these are the fundamental things to think about. Again, what we're trying to promote is the consideration of the ability to utilize mechanization and automation in a structure like that. I would argue that it's not particularly amenable. Here's just one fairly obvious contrast. On point number one, the precocity. This is a photo taken by a colleague, Marlene Ayala, in an orchard in California, where these trees are the same age. In the foreground, you're seeing a KGB architecture, which is repeated early pruning to get uniformity in vertical fruiting wood. And to the side of this grower is the UFO fruiting wall. Those are the same age. And you can see there's this dramatic difference in the precocity of those systems and the ability to fruit early and recapture that investment. Not only that, if you go back to that block now, you will see a dramatic difference on the ability of those blocks to utilize platforms, to utilize mechanical thinning, to utilize mechanical pruning, to bring in a robot-ready harvest of cherries. It's really quite dramatic. One of the things that I've been able to do in Stone Fruit is look to the leadership and the expertise in palm fruit because they've had dwarfing rootstocks decades before we have. And so we can look at these structures and see the evolution that's happened through leadership and research, but also just through leadership in the growing community in the industry and see how these systems have evolved, as Dr. Misaki just outlined. This is one example, Jazz on M9, just out the back door of our research station here, 100 bins, 100 tons per hectare, 100 bins per acre, consistently year after year through precision orchard management, bud thinning. What are the successes? Here's a V trellis, quite an older one, but that same idea, an angled wall here, but it's compact fruiting zone, very high input efficiency from light, from labor, from pesticides. There's predictable fruiting and vigor. These are, in other words, calm trees is going to be key to the future of this. And it ultimately comes down to precision orchard management, repeated processes to similar fruiting structures year after year after year. And so we've been trying in the stone fruit world to accomplish this and going about it in various ways. This is an example of a UFO orchard, a vertical fruiting wall, 10 years old Tyotin. Here's early robin. An early Rainier type cherry, but in that same structure, that vertical unbranched fruiting wood in creating an angled fruiting wall. Here's another one that's the same idea. It's an angled wall of fruit, but in this case, you've got horizontal fruiting wood and a vertical permanent structure versus the others having a horizontal permanent structure and renewable vertical wood. It's going about it in very different ways, but essentially accomplishing that compact fruiting wall. So as we do think about, just sort of summarize the thought processes here and what I've seen, we're looking at compact fruiting walls, really, in their ability to incorporate automation and mechanization. But not only that, I'm going to show you a few examples here of how they are efficient in other ways as well. Here's some data that we collected using the same pickers and going to commercial orchards and harvesting fruit. This is sweet cherries, and you're looking at the left on different genotypes, and the center would describe the training system. It basically goes from low density old ones to higher density new structures. And actually you'll see there's apples on the bottom. And you can see here the main harvest rate, kilos per person. This is where I came up with that 22 billion cherries would take you 2,500 years. I took an average of about half a kilo per person per hour, per minute, which is really quite good. Although I suppose if we were out there, it might be half a kilo per hour. We're not quite as efficient as some of these people. One of the issues that I've also been able to make is the need for these developments in sweet cherry. Look at the number for apples. 3.5 to 4.5. It's 7-8-fold faster than picking cherries. So again, cherry is this wonderful specialty crop that we think is ripe for improvements in efficiencies. Dr. Misaki sort of outlined this, and I want to put it in a simple way. When we think about these structures and this transition that's been outlined, think about it from inputs and outputs in an orchard. This photo of a cherry orchard at the bottom, I put it in the low input, low output range in that quadrant, right? If you just think in a very simple way, you could argue that block actually should perhaps be over towards the low output, high input. In other words, it's probably somewhere in between. Now, one of the issues that growers often describe to me is, well, you're talking about these, like this picture in the top right. It's a high density orchard, fruiting wall. It's expensive. I've got trellises now. I've got high costs of establishment. This is high input, very high input, and I need to have high output. In other words, margins get quite thin. It's challenging to maintain that as profitable. But where I see this group and this movement towards is that top left, where finally we've got these fruiting walls, then afford the adoption of the mechanization. And therefore, we move into this high output but low input quadrant. So I often think about it in that way. And the examples that I'll show you are ones in which I think we're in this transition right now. So it's creating structures that can work and then finding out how efficient are they and what other things that you could think almost as intermediate towards that ultimate goal of a robot-ready orchard, okay? So utilizing platforms is an obvious one. Here's a sweet cherry fruiting wall where they've been using these platforms for tying of limbs to the wires. They've been using it for hand thinning when necessary, or utilizing even handheld mechanical string thinners to the upper portions of the canopy. They use it for pruning and harvest. They use it to work at night as well. And overall, the grower experience with these types of platforms has been about a 30% increase in worker efficiency per task. Not to mention, and they've not been utilized long enough to really generate reliable data on the reduction in insurance claims from falls from ladders. This is one of the bigger issues. And as Stefano said, it also allows for the potential for harvest at night. This is a video that Dave Gleason loaned me from Kershaw Fruit, illustrating apple harvest at night with a bicolored apple. It's so important to make that harvest decision based on the color of the fruit. And they find they are more efficient. Pickers are more efficient at night, and they're making better color picking decisions when they've got a consistent source of LED light in there. And there are a lot of issues related to these, the utilization of platforms, including visibility and fruit quality. These guys actually found that fruit quality went up when they were picking at night in a bicolored situation. Let me talk very briefly about the obvious one, mechanical harvest of sweet cherries, because it's 50, 55, sometimes 60% of an annual operating budget for a grower is tied up in the harvest of those fruit. Our program has taken a short-ish and a long-ish approach to solutions for that. Again, focusing on fresh market quality fruit. The shorter term is mechanically assisted, and we're looking at shake and catch systems here, and the longer term one is just a fully mechanical harvest. A couple of photos of some grad students from our Center for Precision Automated Agricultural Systems on the left, where we took handheld operated, battery-powered reciprocating saws, modified those to put a shaking hook on the end, put a little rheostat on that motor so you can control the actuation and the power and the energy that's put into that system so that we're moving just the fruit that we want to and not damaging fruit. And then working in fruiting walls here and demonstrating this with growers. To summarize years of research in this area, we have found a 3 to 4-fold improvement in harvest efficiency. So that's how you take 2,500 years and tomorrow you make it 600 years for you to pick those fruit. If one did have, and we've been trying to demonstrate how to plant and prune and train an orchard like this, this is a very flat angled wide trellis for cherries, one could adopt a fully mechanical harvest system, which we've also been investigating. Now, with that wide trellis, you can increase your harvest efficiency approximately 50-fold, not 4 times, but 50 times. That's you with a picking bucket and a ladder versus you operating a mechanical harvester. It's quite dramatic in the potential. We estimate cost of harvest of 25 to 27 cents per pound right now. With this harvest system, we estimate them to be about 1.5 cents per pound. So the potential is there. We're almost on the doorstep of this with systems and with machines. Again, this biology plus technology coming together. And I don't have time to get into this really, but a lot of you are going to be thinking right now, but nobody wants stem-free cherries, right? These harvest systems leave the pedestal on the tree. But I'll tell you that people do. And if we come up with innovative solutions for marketing these stem-free cherries, it works quite well. And there's an example of that. Let me touch briefly in the last few minutes that I have here on pruning. This is a video of a fellow pruning a steep leader tree. It's a very common architecture in Washington State cherries. I'm going to suggest to you that, well, the fact is pruning is the second greatest expense behind harvest. I'm going to suggest, though, that pruning is more difficult than harvesting. Probably everybody in here can go out and you could get some cherries off a tree. But if I gave you a pair of loppers and said prune that orchard, I think a lot of us would struggle in there. What in the world is that guy doing? I mean, you can watch what he's doing. You know, he's pruning, he's removing wood, but every cut is a strategic decision. I'm not going to show the whole video. 71 seconds. He made 66 cuts. If you watch it to the end, that's about a cut per second, all from the ground. What in the world were the rules that he followed there to do that pruning? How could I tell you to go out there and do that pruning, right? Very, very difficult. Could you mechanize that pruning process? Well, you probably could, actually. The engineers say you can. It would just be very expensive. So this follows in with our ideas for orchard systems also, and very simplified pruning and training processes, giving somebody a pair of loppers and going and being able to prune it. If you can give somebody a pair of loppers and it's a simple process, why not sit at a machine with a hedge and a sickle bar and make those pruning cuts as well? We've seen examples of 25 times improvements of efficiency when you create that architecture that you can prune that way. I want to finish up with one final idea. What could be new then in this? So I'm kind of showing you things. You say, well, why isn't everybody doing that? One newer idea that we've got, which relates in some ways to what Dr. Misaki said, is this future orchard systems, vertical walls. Here's an idea, 3 meters between rows, about greater than a 1-to-1 row to height spacing, we would suggest. What we're interested in, what we've been proposing and trying to get some funding for, is this over the row system where you're actually maybe 1.5 meters between rows now. And you say, well, tractors can't fit, bins can't fit. That's right. We're thinking about fruiting zones that are compact, but toolbar type structure. And maybe if we do this in a meeting in another 5 years, we can show you some specific results from these concepts. With that, exactly 20 minutes. So I suspect we're going to save questions for the end, or if there's time now. Dr. Chen, what do you think? One question, okay.